This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The first of three movies based on J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings opens in theaters on Wednesday. The trilogy reportedly cost about $300 million. One movie will be released each Christmas through 2003. Tolkien's books have sold more than 50 million copies and have been interpreted as both a Christian allegory and a mythology for the 20th century. The Lord of the Rings is the story of a small, homely creature from a small town who reluctantly takes up a quest to save the world. Pat Dowell reports.
J.R.R. Tolkien said The Lord of the Rings was not an allegory of any historical event, but he would not deny its applicability, as he called it.
He did write Lord of the Rings during a time when war was going on, World War II, and I think uppermost in his mind always were the events of World War I, in which so many of his close friends were killed.
Jane Chance teaches Tolkien's work at Rice University and has written two books about the trilogy that Tolkien began in 1937.
I am sure, given the fact that he wrote especially Volume 2 for his son Christopher when he was an RAF pilot flying over Africa, and sent chapters of the trilogy to him in weekly letters, that he was attempting to create a story of consolation for his own son to help him survive the perils of World War II, somehow almost magically keeping him alive.
Tolkien finished the third volume in 1950, but he could not find a publisher. In 1952, he made an audio recording of excerpts from The Lord of the Rings.
Out of the east there came a great eagle flying, and he bore tidings beyond hope from the lords of the west, crying, "Sing now, ye people of the Tower of Anor, for the realm of Sauron is ended forever, and the Dark Tower is thrown down. Sing and rejoice, ye people of the Tower of God, for your watch hath not been in vain, and the black gate is broken, and your king hath passed through, and he is victorious. Sing and be glad, all ye children of the west, for your king shall come again, and he shall dwell among you all the days of your life."
Despite the biblical language and the references to an evil empire in the east that could be seen as an allusion to the Soviet Union during the Cold War, Tolkien insisted that he was only writing a fairy tale, a story about a quest to destroy an ancient, all-powerful ring. Tolkien denied that the ring was a metaphor for the atom bomb. Instead, he said, he wanted to create a mythology for England. Tolkien was a philologist, a scholar of languages. He drew on that knowledge to create his fictional languages with their own grammar and rules, and then he built his stories and his world of Middle-earth on that.
It almost seems too much for one person to have been able to invent all this stuff. It feels more like Tolkien discovered some sort of long-lost scrolls.
Peter Jackson, the director and co-writer of the new movies, says he kept that thought uppermost in adapting the books, a six-year project so far. He even instructed his cast and crew to look at it that way.
I said to them, just imagine if The Lord of the Rings is true, that the book relates events that really happened in our own world about 6,000 or 7,000 years ago.
Jackson read the books when he was 18 years old, after he saw the 1978 animated film version. When the first books were published in 1954, they sold modestly. But after The Lord of the Rings came out in an American paperback edition in 1965, it became a global phenomenon. By 1970, there were fan clubs, bumper stickers, and themed restaurants. The counterculture embraced the books for their love of nature, simple living, and a reference to a recreational drug called pipeweed. And the books were yet again connected to war, this time Vietnam, says Professor Jane Chance.
The general background of Lord of the Rings, with the emphasis on war, violence, power, aggrandizement, appropriation, would all have been particularly alive at that time to readers in the 60s when Vietnam was going on, and even in the 50s when the Korean War was paramount. Now, I think we long for peace and happy times again, given the events of 9/11 and the threat of terrorist intrusion at every homely level.
In the 1970s, The Lord of the Rings helped shape the game Dungeons & Dragons, and in the 1990s, the Harry Potter books, according to Henry Jenkins, MIT's director of comparative media studies. He says that Tolkien also had an influence on George Lucas's multimedia empire, Star Wars, because Tolkien reclaimed fantasy for adults and created a modern myth.
The real influence of Tolkien on Star Wars was inviting George Lucas to think of himself as a mythologer, as someone who, you know, would stand up to the scrutiny of a Joseph Campbell in terms of his borrowing of core myths of Western culture, and someone who saw himself telling a story on an ever-expanding landscape that included not simply the films, but various novels, comic books, computer games.
Jenkins says that people use mythology to make sense of their everyday experiences. He also says that public figures make use of mythology to shape public opinion.
I think when George Bush talks about evildoers, he's cast the current war in a language of fantasy or mythology more than a language of the real. Surely he doesn't actually believe that we could rid the earth of evildoers, which is something that Jehovah never quite succeeded in doing, so it's very unlikely George Bush is going to pull off. Instead, he's trying to give an heroic stature to a much more down-to-earth sort of struggle.
In The Lord of the Rings, Jenkins says, Tolkien is asking an important question that we have yet to answer.
Tolkien is asking the characters, if you had an enormous weapon of mass power, do you use it to destroy an incredible evil? Or is the danger of embracing terror to battle terror so great that it will destroy your soul? That seems to me is the heart of The Lord of the Rings. That is, do you use the ring against the Dark Lords and the Dark Riders, or do you destroy it? And in destroying it, force yourself to confront a longer and slower struggle, but one where you can maintain moral rightness. And I think that is a question that people are struggling with at the present moment. As the film comes out in the midst of our struggles with terror around the world, we should be asking, have we stooped to the same level of the forces we're fighting when we use terror to battle terror?
Tolkien actually said that the ring could be seen as, quote, an allegory of the inevitable fate that waits for all attempts to defeat evil power by power. In the movie, Gandalf the Wizard, played by Ian McKellen, reads the ring's inscription, a promise of doom for all who wish to possess it.
In the common tongue, it says, one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them. One ring to bring them all, and in the darkness, bind them.
Bondage and free will are very much a point of the story, says the movie's director, Peter Jackson.
Tolkien said that he felt he was born 100 years too late, that he would have loved to have lived, he would have rather lived in an English countryside without industry, without factories, without the machine, and he felt that the internal combustion engine was the greatest evil that had ever been sort of put upon this earth. And the ring also represents that to some degree, that the ring enslaves you, it makes you a servant to it, it takes away your free will. The irony is technology has been harnessed in all its might and turned itself on this story to bring it to life. It's pretty weird.
But while high-tech special effects can make Tolkien's world believable on film, it's also true that after Wednesday, readers will now see Frodo and Gandalf not in their own mind's eye, but through Peter Jackson's. Tolkien wanted his readers to interpret the story themselves. Applicability, he said, resides in the freedom of the reader. For NPR News, this is Pat Dowell.